Fannie Mae is still losing money, but a lot less of it.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Mortgage giant Fannie Mae came out with its earnings late yesterday, and it reported another loss, the company's 12th quarterly loss in a row. Plus, Fannie asked the federal government for more cash. If you remember, the feds took Fannie over 2 years ago. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joins us live to talk about this. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good morning, Bill.
So a loss of just over $3 billion and another bailout request from U.S. taxpayers for $1.5 billion. That doesn't sound too good.
Well, the positive spin is, my grandfather might have put it, could have been worse.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it has been worse. This is actually Fannie's smallest loss in 3 years. And in the bailout column, Fannie and its smaller compatriot Freddie Mac have already gotten $146 billion to stay afloat. So another $1.5 billion, I don't know, seems like a drop in the bucket.
Quite a drop. But Mitchell, the housing market is still so lousy. When is Fannie going to stop asking taxpayers for more money?
Well, Fannie, keep in mind, Fannie and Freddie together still back 9 in 10 new home loans, and the government has more or less pledged to support them indefinitely. So we don't really know when they'll be off the dole. Mortgage delinquency rates are still near record highs, so these lenders have to set aside massive reserves to cover future losses. But, and this is an important one, the quality of loans that Fannie has guaranteed or bought up since the financial crisis hit is actually much better. Underwriting standards were tightened way up after the problems in the mid-2000s. And so far, those loans are actually performing well. The people who are getting loans are paying their mortgages. That stabilizes Fannie's balance sheet going forward. Now, if the economy dips into recession again, you know, housing prices plunge another 20%, all bets are probably off.
Right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman. Mitchell, thank you.
You're welcome.
New Jersey lawmakers are gathering in Atlantic City today, and they're not there to gamble. Actually, that's Atlantic City's problem. Not enough people going there to gamble. Reporter Sally Herships says the whole state is feeling the drop-off.
A couple of years ago, Atlantic City's entertainment industry employed 50,000 people, but now that number has dropped by almost a quarter. John Hansen is chairman of the Governor's Advisory Commission for New Jersey Gaming. He says part of the problem comes from outside the state.
Competition. When the casinos opened in Atlantic City, there were no casinos on the eastern seaboard.
Today, there are lots of places to roll the dice. New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Delaware. Jim Whalen is a New Jersey state senator. He says Atlantic City is run down, not a selling point for cash-strapped tourists.
People don't feel safe because they're looking at a block where the dominant characteristic is empty ground and abandoned buildings.
He says Atlantic City needs new casinos.
We've had one new casino open in the last 20 years.
And new thinking.
Dining, retail, entertainment. We can't just think in isolation of, here's a casino with a bunch of rooms and a bunch of slot machines.
Casino gaming represents one of New Jersey's largest industries, nearly $1 billion in state and local taxes. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Now let's check on a different form of gambling. Stocks, that is. Shares in Europe are paying 0.5% this morning. Asian stocks were mixed. Yesterday in New York, the NASDAQ fell 0.5%, but the Dow Industrials only gave up 5 points and ended at 10,674.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Gather.com, the social network where people can make new friends who share their interests. People talking about today's news at news.gather.com.
Remember when it seemed like property values would go nowhere but up? A lot of people bought condos right before the crash and now are trying to get out of those contracts. But a court decision could make that tougher. Here's reporter Nyla Boudou in Miami.
For the past year in downtown Miami, Paul Joyce has dressed in a dark suit and stood across the street from a condo development called the Icon Brickell. Every day, Joyce holds up a cardboard sign asking the building's owners to call him.
The reason I have been out here is I took a pre-construction contract, and in the fast rollout, certain things were represented that didn't go down.
He still wants to live in the building. But others in South Florida put down deposits for condos before they were built, never intending to live there. They were speculating. Now the units are worth half of what they were during the boom. So many are turning to the courts to get back their deposits.
You can argue that the money that they put down was not unlike the ante in a poker game or the money that you have to put down to play blackjack.
Andrea Houston is a University of Miami finance professor. She says these depositors were like gamblers simply because they weren't seeing these condos as long-term investments, but as properties they could flip. Now that construction is done, the contracts are coming due, even for people who never intended to live in the units, so they're suing. Alan Levine is a Fort Lauderdale lawyer who represents developers. He's won a case in federal court that will hamper many buyers' lawsuits. It involves a law passed by Congress in the 1960s. It was designed to prevent people from selling swampland to unsuspecting buyers and require certain disclosures. Condo purchasers are now using that law to argue developers didn't follow through on promises and don't deserve to be paid.
It has served as a trap for potentially unwary developers that gives buyers in a down market an excuse to try and get out of their contracts.
Other lawyers say these days it comes down to the luck of the draw and whether individual judges are sympathetic to either condo buyers or the developers. In Miami, I'm Nyla Boodoo for Marketplace.
And finally, here's the week's business news in a Marketplace Minute. Once again, the economy's aching while companies show us the money they're making. Kraft sold a lot of cheese nips and Chips Ahoy and Miracle Whips and Ritz and Kool-Aid and Shake and Bake and A1 sauce to put on your steak, while Procter & Gamble was head and shoulders above the rest, thanks to Crest and Pampers and Pringles and Bounty and Braun and Tide and Gillette and Downy and Dawn. Profits were disappointing at Dow, which used to own Scrubbing Bubbles, but now it's chemicals, pesticides, styrofoam, and plastics and rubber and stuff for your home. Profits were up at the other Dow, Jones. It's one of the things Rupert Murdoch owns, along with the Wall Street Journal and Fox. You know his shares rose if you follow the stocks. Meanwhile, the rest of us suffer along, expecting bad news and hoping we're wrong. The employment report comes today, so we'll see. And I'll see you at marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Radke, tweeting at Bill Radke Radio.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.